This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. My name is Rob St. George, and today our guest is Head of ETFs at LGIM, Howie Lee. Howie, I think we're all aware that there are powerful long-term forces shaping investment markets. What makes one of those forces a theme?
That's a great question, Rob. I think the most important thing is to recognize that something is changing. What we always try to identify is the difference between, let's say, a long-term theme versus a shorter-term fad. We kind of get this question quite a bit from investors. What we're really looking for is a change in the way that we live our lives, the change in the way the traditional businesses are structured, and actually recognizing that how we will kind of live our lives, consume things, operate things, let's say in 5-10 years time, is completely different than what we've done, say, 20 years ago. So by identifying these structural foundational changes, we're recognizing the fact that there are investment opportunities that try to capture and to really invest in that change.
So when you conceptualize these themes, are there any threads that link them? Are there any characteristics they tend to have in common?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So nowadays, with technology and actually the world of the future, everything is connected. So we take one step back. There are kind of three really key drivers as to what's shaping our future. Technology, we've already touched on that. Certainly, technology is being integrated into every part of our lives. Many businesses are being transformed and sometimes disrupted because of the introduction or further use of technology. But you also have other drivers, such as the energy transition and the way we use resources. We kind of look at both the regulatory drivers, but also the social drivers of how we consume energy and how we want to consume and use and store energy. That in itself is also driving change. And of course, we can't ignore the fact that there's lots of conversations about different kind of geographies and demographics and the fact that the population is changing. Whether the conversation is about a growing class of, let's say, the aging population, but also the change in the way that people think. If you kind of people often refer back to millennials and perhaps even the next generation after that.
Now, these, as you mentioned, are long-term, substantial, structural shifts in the economy and in markets. How do we make sure that they are also compelling investment opportunities for people today?
I'm glad you asked that question, because what we've kind of noticed over the past 5-6 years that we've really been covering very focused themes is that more and more it's become a bit of a marketing term. People love to hear robotics and love to talk about AI. And I'll give you some examples. If you start looking through kind of financial statements, or if you start looking through, say, even patent filings, people love to include the word AI because it makes the business sound a lot more futuristic. Something that I always say to people is, well, when you hear the word AI, ask the question, what is that, what is that artificial intelligence being used for? For us, artificial intelligence is actually relying on a piece of technology that will make a decision for you by absorbing a certain amount of information or data points. What artificial intelligence isn't, and is sometimes dressed up to be, is essentially just automation of process. So I think we really need to split up of what's the difference between automation and robotics is very much key to that, but versus what's coming down the line and some of the exciting opportunities with artificial intelligence.
Mm. Now, you mentioned AI there and robotics, and you mentioned earlier that technology runs through most of these themes. So to play devil's advocate for a second, why should an investor simply not buy a technology sector product?
Okay, so I wouldn't say that investors shouldn't buy technology sector products. I think what they need to recognize is that the long-term thematic investing is different. So if you take a look at a typical technology fund, whether it's a passive index tracking one or even an active technology fund, What I would say is that the common feature is that it tends to be kind of focused on either large or even sometimes mega caps. Over the last couple of years, the term FANG gets used a lot, and that's certainly in a lot of people's portfolios. And if you take a look at a so-called a tech benchmark, an index, you will see these kind of FANG stocks right at the very top. And they're weighted by the size of their market capitalization. So really, the opportunities are highly focused on some of these big names. But interestingly, the opportunities often sit at a layer below that. Sometimes the smaller large cap companies, often the mid cap companies, and in certain cases, the liquid small cap companies. And for what we're trying to do is not just identify generic kind of technologies where, you know, it's a company that's been classified under a traditional sector screen. We're trying to identify opportunities from the bottom up, working together with experts to really highlight kind of opportunities which are often not covered in the financial sector, not, let's say, done by analysts in the kind of the sell side, the research space. We want to be able to give investors, let's say it's AI, let's say it's robotics, let's say it's cybersecurity, kind of bottom-up selection of that universe and provide a diversified approach where there's a high connection and purity to that particular theme.
Okay, so I think that makes the case for why large caps may not capture this opportunity set fully. But equally, why not simply invest in venture capital or private markets if your liquidity profile allows?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. So I'm not saying that investors shouldn't have large caps in their portfolio, not at all. We recognize from an asset allocation perspective, there's plenty of large caps that are in traditional portfolios, whether it's active or passive funds. Thematic investing for us is to try to identify unique opportunities that sit alongside those very neatly. So that I'll give you an example. If we had a large cap of a sizable weight in any of our thematic funds, there's a good chance that that stock is also held somewhere else. And I think the last thing that investors want is the inability to control concentration risk, where they find they might be holding, say, 15, 16% of a single stock simply because we're holding, let's say, a US fund and a thematic fund. So for us, it's really being conscious and aware of that. Just talking about the private space, hugely exciting. You know, from our team's perspective, focusing on thematic investments and working with these experts, they are researching and following what's happening in the private space. Clearly, we in an ETF vehicle, as an open-ended liquid vehicle, we can't provide exposure to these private companies. However, there are some exciting opportunities there. They do go into IPOs. They do make it into the listed market. But what they serve as a great opportunity to do, or a great measure of, is the direction that a theme is headed. You know, what technologies are being done here? What processes are being solved? How are businesses, you know, changing the direction of their business to benefit from this change? And in the private space, you see a lot of activity there. And we want to use that as a guiding principle of how to run the public portfolio as well. Some of our investors do, in fact, have the ability to run a portfolio of private investments, sometimes held through private equity LPs, sometimes held through investment trusts. And I think it's always good for an investor to have a good understanding of how a publicly listed portfolio of thematic funds sits alongside a large cap technology portfolio versus their less liquid drivers in the private space. The only thing I would highlight, of course, in the private space that all investors probably are aware of is just the liquidity. And if it's an investment trust, some investors have started to ask questions more around the ETFs because in an investment trust, it being close-ended, you do have to bearing in mind the risks of both a premium and a discount on, let's say, the net asset value of any investment.
So that was a fairly high-level overview of how to think about thematic investing. Perhaps that's the easy part. The hard part may be how to translate that into an actual investable portfolio. You mentioned when thinking about themes the importance of bottom-up research, but equally you mentioned that some of these opportunities aren't fully understood by traditional market analysts. So how in practice do we go about finding out what kind of companies best capture and represent these themes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. To try to make this investable is not an easy task. It's not simply reading what's happening in the news and speaking to certain experts on a panel and then going on to kind of traditional screens and try to find these companies. That's the journey that we've been on for the last 6 years, and recognize that, you know, there are opportunities being missed if we're just using traditional financial screens. We kind of take a step back. You know, we're very familiar with index investments and managing portfolios, etc. And there's a lot of emphasis in the asset management industry around traditional sectors. And I say traditional because, you know, some of these sectors have been set in stone for the last 20 years. The last time we saw a change was actually only a year ago when we saw the introduction of the telecommunications sector. And what that meant was we saw certain so-called technology stocks move into another area. That obviously affects how sectors are valued. That also changes the makeup of the telecommunications sector, which in its previous guise was a lot more defensive and utilities heavy. But that is a very backward looking, oh, look what's happened in the last 19 years. We've had the internet companies come into play. Facebook came into it was listed. Google was listed. And it sounds really, you're probably looking at me now thinking, you're bringing up companies from 20 years ago. But that's how old and how backward looking some of these sectors have been in terms of its definition. For us, it's actually trying to identify the future sectors, which are yet undefined. It's really trying to look at how is the world going to look like in 5-10 years' time? Where are the areas where likely the traditional kind of classifications will kind of move towards? And so the only way to do that really is, you know, putting our hands up and say our knowledge. We do stuff best around the financial side and managing investments. We really need experts' help who spend their time just in that theme, whether it's our e-commerce logistics and working with just the logistics experts who are constantly researching logistics companies and understanding how they're repositioning their business towards e-commerce, how they're using their research and development spend towards e-commerce. And it's because they're so plugged in both to private companies as well as public companies, that they can inform us what's happening on the macro level. So how is logistics helping to power up e-commerce? Because there's a huge disruption there coming from the change in consumer behavior. People want to buy things online. In the logistics side, now everything changes. It's not as simple as taking a manufactured good, putting it into a distribution warehouse, sending it to a store, job done. It's now taking the distribution, the manufactured goods, putting into a distribution warehouse, figuring out where it's all going to go in much smaller packages, delivering it to a more local hub using a so-called hub and spoke model, and then getting that to individuals' doors. And people like you and me probably want it the next day now. And this is before we even talk about returns and people's refunds policies because of online shopping.
Okay, so that sounds like a massive challenge for the entire logistics industry.
Absolutely, because it's about catch-up right now. It's trying to deliver these goods to the end consumer in a very short period of time, and then also to take into account returns. So this challenge is also exacerbated by the fact that the industry itself is somewhere between 5 to 10% automated. So technology obviously plays a huge role here in making sure the efficiency is there and making sure the artificial intelligence can figure out where goods should go in its most optimal kind of place and position, but also to optimize the delivery and collection of packages. So yes, a huge opportunity for the logistics market because of this change in consumer behavior driven by technology.
Mm. So as you set out, these are so transformative. They affect almost every stage of an industry. There are the companies pioneering in technology. There are their customers who are benefiting from these technologies. But there are also those incumbents who are going to be disrupted. So how do you segment these businesses, and which ones do you want to own in an index?
Yeah, it's a very good question because it's not right to completely ignore so-called incumbent or big companies, because smart companies recognize these trends early and they adopt change and they invest in change. So again, it's working with the experts to understand, who's contributing to that trend. Sometimes it's in relation to revenues. Sometimes it's in relation to the R&D spend. We often get a question around kind of valuations, and sometimes that's that singular measure can be misleading because you're assuming that people are, in that case, are not reinvesting into the business, such as R&D costs. So, it's really important to understand just across the entire, the all cap space, and we're not trying to bias a portfolio of small, mid, or large cap. We're trying to look for opportunities, and we're trying to look for opportunities which are very geared and very close to that change. So if it's an incumbent, so-called a large company, who have spent a lot of money either through acquisitions or through research and development, they can make it into our investment strategy or indices.
So how important is it to bake diversification of the value chain of a theme into an index?
For us, very important, because again, what we're trying to identify is a long-term theme as opposed to a fad. Sometimes you can be too focused. So, clients of ours often call us up and say, hey, do you have, and this is how our battery technology ETF started, do you have a lithium ETF? Or do you have an electric vehicles ETF? Do you have a cobalt ETF? And you start to take this feedback to understand, where are we getting to? What do investors actually want? And it turns out what they're after is the full value chain of where the energy storage space is going, and hence the birth of our kind of battery technology investment strategy. And really, it's to try to capture, both on the material side, what is being captured in the materials to put into battery technology for the use of energy storage. So we're both capturing the materials down to the technology that's driving battery and energy storage, and how that's deployed before it, let's say, gets into our smartphones, computers, cars, or whatever that might be, and more in the future as part of the grid energy system.
Again, all of this needs to be translated into an investable index. So what kind of rules can you put in place to make this a systematic process?
Yep, very good question, because I think you've identified our selection, and there's a lot of active research that goes into that selection. And to answer your question is, how do we ensure that we are consistent, we're systematic, and we have high conviction towards the theme? So once the universe is identified together with our experts, and this is updated, by the way, and refreshed sometimes every quarter, sometimes every 6 months, the idea being that new opportunities come and opportunities that are no longer relevant fall off or may have fallen off because of corporate actions. But once it's there, we broadly take an equal weight approach. Now, for each theme, we look at each theme differently. We take advice from the experts as to, what are the metrics we should be looking at? What are the data that we should be looking at? But broadly, we're looking at an equal weighted portfolio. The very important thing from an investability point of view is always to focus on liquidity and always to focus on kind of the market cap size. And here, we always have a minimum cap size for each of our themes. It's different for each theme to reflect the companies that within that space. But also, there's sufficient liquidity on a stock level to make sure that we can access it when we buy and sell the investments. Now, we're very lucky in some of our funds to have a very regular activity. And so we know that we're able to buy all these stocks. And it's also in some of our newer funds, we do a lot of testing to make sure that, if we were ever to take a big order in any given day, we're able to accept that. And we work very closely, the portfolio management team, together with the investment strategy team, to recognize if there are early signs of, are there capacity constraints? Do we need to enhance liquidity somehow? And you would have seen from some of our investments that they've gone through evolution to make sure that, let's say, the liquidity filters are increased or market cap sizes are changed to reflect and provide the ability for more investments to come into the fund whilst keeping it extremely liquid and priced intraday and sold intraday as an ETF.
Okay. And also from an end investor's perspective, how can one assess and analyze the integrity and purity of an index's exposure to the desired theme, do you think?
Wow. So if you look at the portfolio level, so I'm going to put myself in one of our client's shoes, client being a multi-asset fund allocator, probably owning equities in broken by different regions and then potentially thematic investments, let's say. In terms of testing the purity, I think, you know, for us, first of all, identifying thematic investments means you should have low overlap. You know, we're trying to minimize, say, concentration risk. We want to bring new opportunities. So there are different measures, you know, and this is where our job comes in to make sure we're giving you that connection, that purity. So I think earlier I talked about kind of revenue coming from that theme or from that activity itself. I've also talked about kind of research and development spend. That's another measure sometimes. Other areas where let's talk about our pharmaceutical breakthroughs. You know, we are identifying the highest growth area within pharmaceuticals as it relates to orphan drugs because this is where we're trying to target a very specific area, which is the development of drugs to help cure rare diseases. And that requires an understanding of how much that kind of the what they call the value of that drug over a period of time for that the orphan drug industry. And so we will need to have the MVP, the present value for those to understand how much it's contributing to that space. So to take that away, different themes have different ways of looking at it. You know, the value is one, revenue is another, R&D is another. What we always like to keep an eye on for our investors is increase in revenue growth, increase in sales, because that shows a healthy company. The other thing we also keep an eye on are kind of broker forecasts, see how we're doing on earnings. You want these companies to all basically beat what analysts are thinking, because that means that there's opportunities that the markets haven't priced in.
Okay, so from that multi-asset investor's perspective, do you see thematic products and investments more as a satellite part of a portfolio, or can they ever be the core foundational bedrock of a portfolio?
We have seen a variety of approaches, and that, I think that's the interesting thing about kind of multi-asset investing. If you asked me this question 5 years ago, lots of engagement with our clients want to talk about these themes, want to find a way to put it in their portfolio, but never really worked out how to integrate it because there was no rule book that says thematic investments fits here. What's really interesting, we see some investors look at it as, okay, we'll put this as part of the growth portion of our equities and they'll manage it accordingly. Some of our investors manage according to sectors. So they think, okay, well, there's the traditional technology, but some of these themes are tech-led. This is the kind of the new wave of technology. So how do we put them and kind of put them in the portfolio together so we have exposure to everything? And then some other investors have actually an always-on thematic kind of bucket where they just want to park it there. They're explaining to the clients, these are indeed long-term structural trends that we're investing in. And in a way, that's a core part of the portfolio. Now, different investors have attribute various weights to that, but it's extremely fascinating to see how investors are coming with these solutions to integrate this thematic thinking into their multi-asset portfolios.
And I guess similarly, a tough question, is it possible at all in any way to time exposure to themes? Can you ever be too early? Can you be too late? Do you have to consider the valuations of the underlying companies?
Yeah, that's that the timing thing is always a very interesting question, because if timing was so easy, I think everybody would get it right and be able to deliver a lot of value there. What we try to aim to do for themes is picking the perfect time is difficult, just as picking tomorrow's winners right now at this point is going to be difficult. So what we encourage investors to do is really think about having the conviction and theme first and foremost. So do you believe that our future is connected and it's connected by data, and the protection of that data is important, and therefore cybersecurity is going to keep growing as long as there's there are hackers or people that want access to that information. And many people, as you can see in the press these days, agree that is a big issue that's going to be ongoing for some time. So, from picking the perfect timing, I think in the kind of long term, you're really looking at, am I able to have a little bit more during this short period of time? Some people ask us about valuations, and I think it's important maybe to have an understanding of, how much the valuations have moved, let's say, in a five-year time scale. You know, is it 10 times PE? Is it 20x PE? Is it 30? And then for investors to get comfortable, because different sectors have different valuation metrics. And I'm not even going to go into what's happening in some of the really kind of private end of how valuations are dealt with. That's why it's important to be diversified. And it's important to have high conviction to the theme itself.
Howie, thank you so much for talking us through your thinking on thematic investing.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And if you would like to read more about how Howie and his team think about thematic investing, please do click the link in the show notes. Thank you for listening to LGM Talks, and please tune in next time.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.